Hey, everybody. Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show championing the local comic book shop. Broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station. Thanks to us.
Thanks to us, yeah.
And podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I'm Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I'm Chris Owen, professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And Chris, you're also the spinner of some tasty music.
What? I thought we would do classical music from the Warner Brothers cartoon.
Celebrating, of course, the fact that Warner Brothers is going to produce some new material.
What is it, 1,000 minutes?
1,000 minutes. So we're at 200 to 300 new shorts.
That's right. So that last one was from The Rabbit of Seville.
The Rabbit. I love that. One of the classics of all time. Yeah. Classics.
I love when, he's using his ears to actually pat down Elmer Fudd's
head. Yeah. That's awesome. All right, Chris, we meet here every week to talk comics and to inform the listenership on everything that's new in the world of comics. And we do have some cool things to talk about
later on the show.
Later on in the show, but at the beginning, we'll do like we always do, and we will hit New This Week.
New This Week, which is brought to you by...
New This Week is brought to you by Beach Chair Club Soda.
Beach Chair Club Soda.
Out of PEI.
Yep. Yeah, it's
my
good.
Goodness.
It's a good club soda.
It is an excellent bubbly club soda.
Yep. Yep.
And leaves a bit of that aftertaste, that club soda aftertaste.
A little bit of a bitter club soda aftertaste.
And it's
still
really, really nice.
But it's refreshing.
It is refreshing. Yeah, yeah. And probably, I'm going to guess, best enjoyed on a sunny day out on a beach chair.
You might be onto something there.
All right, just
something.
All right, Chris, what do you got for us this week?
Okay, I
got
to talk about this. This is the first one on the hit parade here.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Prelude to the Wedding, number one.
Oh, wait a minute, Chris.
So,
hold on.
Yes.
So, this isn't Batman like number 49 leading up to the wedding.
No,
this is just a separate book about the wedding.
So this is Batman. Okay, so it's actually got a long title. It's actually Batman Prelude to the Wedding, Harley Quinn versus Joker, number one.
Oh,
so there's actually
a number of
Batman Preludes to the Wedding, because the next one, the Batman Wedding issue, comes out next week. So this is the prelude, however you want to call it, prelings and cream, to the wedding. You know what? It's just, they're really milking this whole Batman wedding thing, as they should. It's a big event.
Oh.
I love that Joker and Harley Quinn used to be an item, but now it's Harley Quinn versus the Joker.
It always works out that way, doesn't
it? Though, if there's
ever going to be a versus.
In more ways than
it's
one.
It's between the X's.
Right?
Hey, don't yell at me, please, Chris.
I won't.
Okay. Who's Batman getting married to?
Catwoman, yeah. So you know what? For our listening audience, in case you're really not aware of what's happening in comic culture these days,
right?
This has been going on for a few issues. I'd say about a year ago or so, maybe a little bit longer.
When did he propose?
They got engaged about a year ago.
Yeah. Did he do it like on a beach somewhere in Paris?
On top of
a gargoyle?
Probably on top. I don't recall, to be honest with you. But what was interesting about that is Tom King started the storyline, and he proposed, and then he kind of, for an issue or so, or maybe a few issues, I don't remember, kind of went back and started telling old stories kind of from his past as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of from a different kind of take on it. Anyways, a very interesting storyline. Catwoman, this is a huge thing. There's all kinds of speculation as to whether or not Catwoman will actually marry Batman or not.
Right, so she can walk out on him at the
or maybe he'll walk out on her.
Or beat him up on the altar as a ploy.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen.
Wow.
So a very interesting storyline, lots of stuff going on. Now, one of the things, I got to mention this here because it's the right venue for it.
Mm-hmm.
In case you weren't too sure, there are going to be dozens of variant covers for Batman 50 coming out next week.
You know who I feel sorry for?
Who?
The completist.
Well, this is the thing, right? Here's the thing. There are 50 different issues coming out or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you get an artist like, say, for example, Frank Cho.
Yep.
So Frank Cho is one of my favorite artists.
Mm-hmm.
And so Frank Cho comes around and he does a cover for Batman 50. But then he doesn't just do one cover. He does three interconnecting covers.
Oh.
So if you want to complete that run, you got to get three of those, and they're $15 a pop through mail order through the U.S. So now it's, you know, $65-$80 whatever it is, plus with including shipping U.S. So now you're looking at $110-$120 Canadian for three comics, brand new.
Wow!
And if you just want to read the story, you can go to the local comic book shop and get it for $5.
Wow! I wonder if he does. Like he signs them like with somebody like signature series.
So I don't know about like a CGC signature series.
Yeah.
No, but you can get the signed ones that were more expensive.
Oh,
so you can.
Are they authenticated? Will CGC grade them?
Probably authenticated. I don't know. Maybe I know it might come with a certificate.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
As a side note, I'm going way off on a tangent, but 2 days ago I posted my 400th. Undervalued
spotlight. I saw that for Superman.
And I did Superman number 400. I wanted to stay traditional and pick a number 400 like I did with 300 and 200 and 100.
Yep.
So I looked at all the 400s, and I really liked the Superman 400 for what it delivered.
Right.
And for the price that it's selling at right now, which is peanuts.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But boy, if you ever had a Sig Series dream, like... You had so many creators on that.
Oh, I saw that.
That you know, if you had a, you know, because it was came out in 84.
Yeah.
And I mean, even when Signature Series started in 08, 09, a lot of those guys are still
right.
Alive.
Yeah, you know,
you could have got, you know, a Neil Adams signature beside a Bernie Wrightson signature beside a Starenko signature beside a Burns signature beside a...
All those guys.
I can you imagine what... you know, beside a Frank Miller signature, beside I can keep going, right?
But didn't they have old guys in there too? Like,
well, they had Jack Kirby, had Jerry Robinson,
Kurt Swan, or something.
I don't think
like that.
Swan was involved, no? But okay. Jerry Robinson was involved.
Yeah, okay.
And but I'm thinking like Signature Series is so evolved now. It's all about. How many signatures?
Right.
Yeah.
So a book like that, where there's got to be like 20 different artists.
20, like Hall of Fame type artists. Yeah. If you kind of could amass seven of them on that cover.
So I wonder how that would work. Because, I mean, you probably wouldn't be able to get all seven at once. Right? So you'd have to get one and then get the people.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good question. Because if you're at a con and five guys are there.
Yeah.
You would have to have... your CGC SIG guy
right.
follow you around to all five tables to authenticate.
But what if
you get it encapsulated.
Yeah.
And then my point is you would have to get it encapsulated there.
Right.
Because even if you planned 4 months from now to go to another con where there's four other guys that aren't that one to get your total up to nine SIGs on that.
Yeah.
I don't think you can just hold that.
No.
They wouldn't let you.
No.
Right.
You'd have to send it off there. Because
you have to send it off there.
You'd have to crack it open.
Crack it open.
And then get those signatures again.
Yeah. But I've talked to a few SIG guys, and it's like, they go, well, it all depends. Like, I don't know. I'm making up stuff here. But if you have two signatures, the thing's worth $1,200. But you get the third guy on there, and it's $2,000.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there's only like three of them on it.
Right.
And, I got this one, and this is the only one with all five...
artists.
Actors that played Power Rangers on it or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is the only one.
Yeah.
So the rest of them get $80, and this one gets $1,500 or something like that, right? And that's the way these things work.
Is there still a big market for Signature Series?
It's growing.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But it's getting more niche, right? It's getting more... You have to have more oomph. You have to have more, like... Oh, like, you know, like, so...
It can't just be Joe Blow.
No.
Yeah.
So a thing like Superman 1000.
Right.
Right? You have a lot of talent working on that.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking a thing like Batman, the 50.
Perfect.
Because there's a lot of people going to work on that.
Yeah, but the Batman 50, though, there's maybe a lot of people working on it, but there's even more variant covers.
Yeah.
Right? So there might be like... I don't know, 30 different variant covers by 30 different artists.
Yeah, so you can't really... Yeah.
You know
where that only works? For that Soup 400, the only non-participant I'd get an autograph from on the Soup 400 after I got everybody else.
Yeah.
All right, Stan, throw yours on there too.
He'll pretty much sign anything.
Yeah, he will.
Yeah.
He will.
All right.
All right, let me see what that is.
So that was Batman, Prelude to the Wedding.
And it's at your local comic book shop today.
All right. Next up, we've got... wait, let's just stick with DC here. So next up, we've got DC Batgirl number 24. Now, the reason why I chose this... Mm-hmm. I don't, have you noticed, Walt, lately, in the last few weeks, DC has been doing something really cool where they're getting rid of the actual... like the logo of the book. So it becomes almost what they call a... almost virgin copy.
Yeah, naked, they call
naked, it. Naked, or virgin, or whatever they call it. So they have a really small printing on the very bottom there. They it has what exactly the book is.
Batgirl and, 24. And all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. But I love it because they're using the whole the whole cover...
For the art.
For the art.
This harkens back to the, those old Fables covers.
Yes.
Even though Fables had the big Fables mask on them. Cover is that Fables-esque.
It is. So those were by a guy named, I think his name was James Jean.
Mm-hmm.
This is by a guy named Joshua Middleton.
Right.
And apparently he's the next greatest thing but to slice bread these days.
Nice.
Last book that came out with his cover sold really well and people were speculating on it. And now this one, he's got another one, which is a really cool one where it's got like a half of a skeleton and half of a Batgirl. So really cool looking book.
Oh, fantastic. You know, it is a good looking
book. It is a good looking book.
It's a really good looking book. That's Batgirl number 24, and it's at your local comic book shop.
All right. So next up, we've got Deadpool Assassin number 2. So Deadpool is still a hugely hot character these days. You know, it's kind of weaned for me. I don't really care too much about it anymore. But there certainly is lots of people out there that certainly love the character. And there's lots of cool stuff going on with Deadpool these days. But I'm over it. Deadpool Assassin number 2.
Well, Chris, Deadpool Assassin number 2. Does it have the parental advisory? No.
No.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Does it?
It does have the parental advisory. I didn't ask you. Did you see Deadpool?
I did. That's a case where the comics I'm not a huge fan of anymore, but I love the movies. I thought the movie was great. Deadpool 2 was great. I loved what they... To me, they kind of epitomized what I thought a comic book should be, maybe minus some of the swearing and that kind of thing.
Right.
But, you know, they had fun with it, and just like the Marvel movies are doing, they did a great job with it.
Who does Deadpool? Sony?
Sony's Fox.
Fox.
Because it's a mutant-type character, so...
It's funny, isn't it, when you kind of think about it, how Fox didn't have success when they tried to make a traditional comic book movie, but they had success when they went against the grain of a comic book movie, and they went like with an adult
salty, swearing and broke the fourth wall.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. They went something totally different, and then they found an audience.
Yeah.
And it really kind of overlapped with the traditional comic audience, but not a lot. Like, because, you know, it worked. And yet they're like Fantastic Four tries and stuff. It didn't work.
Didn't work at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like they don't know how to do a regular superhero movie, but do something weird and wacky. Because they had success with Logan, but again, that was rated R.
Rated R,
and
that's
a different take, a different...
Now, wasn't Disney trying to get something up off the ground where they were doing an adult, an R-rated...
Marvel movie?
Marvel? No, that wasn't Disney.
I think there was something going on, but I don't remember what it was now. And whatever it is not talked about anymore.
Right, okay. Yeah. All right. Hey, Deadpool the Assassin, number 2 at your local comic book shop.
Okay, next up, we've got Venom number 2. Legacy number 167, of course, but Venom number 2. Lots of stuff going on here. So this guy, Donnie Cates, is apparently the next best thing in writing these days. Now, I haven't really read anything from him, but he's doing Venom right now. And, of course, the new Venom movie is coming out in October with Tom Hardy. So there's lots of Venom stuff coming out. But apparently, recently, Donnie Cates has also written a book about, what do you call it, Cosmic Ghost Rider, which apparently everybody wants these days. So apparently it's the next big thing, and everybody's looking forward to it. And anything that Donnie Cates is now writing is apparently a great thing. So
fantastic. You know what, though? I'm going to tell you something.
What?
So this Legacy, remember I've been harping on this Legacy? They're calling things number 2, and then they go right underneath it, Legacy 167.
Yeah.
It's kind of growing on me.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to say is this. they're going, hey, we got to pay homage to all the pure Venom books that have come out. Not like, you know, like Batman. They're not going to count that kind of wedding offshoot. No. That doesn't count in continuity. No. But so this Venom, this is the Venom book, right?
Right.
But it's almost like the full extension of this would be this, Chris. Let's say they abandoned this and they went to like 1 of 6, 2 of 6, 3 of 6, and stuff like Dark Horse does with everything like that. So what they're saying is, yeah, these young fans, oh, we need to give them a numeric system where they can buy in by buying a number one.
Right.
But underneath, let's let everybody know how long the run is. So it's kind of like, you know, it's the worst of both worlds.
I know. The best of both worlds. What? Part of me likes the idea, but I guess it's not the new stories. It's the new the fact that they keep on trying to reboot things.
But this way, they're saying, yeah, we're not rebooting. We're just going to renumber
But then part of me says, well, I started buying Batman at issue 475. Why can't anybody else?
Right.
You know, why can't they just number it 172 and, hey, if you like Venom, well, that's your starting point.
Fair enough. Now, my question would be, and I think I know the answer. My question would be the insignia and the research.
Yeah.
What do you look for? I would imagine you look for 167 because literally there may be 11 number 2 Venoms.
Yeah, so you know what? That's where if you look at the indicia, as it's called.
Oh, insignia. Insignia is like a crest.
Insignia is like a crest. It's fine. It's fine. You know what?
ESL.
So this one says Venom 2. So, but then it says August 2018. So that's where in the guide now you got to look at, you know, volume number.
Well, I think they should transfer it and call it Venom 167.
I agree.
And then it's all in one place in the guide, but it's just number 2 for me and you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. All right. Listen, Venom 2.
Venom 2.
Legacy 167.
Yep.
Is at your local comic book shop today.
All right. And finally, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, we don't really talk a whole lot about Valiant comics.
We don't. Why is that?
Well, I don't know, because I don't really care about them, I guess. But there are a lot of people that do. Okay. And because there are a lot of people that do, I thought we'd talk about the fact that there's a lot of actually really good work going into these comics these days. You've got, this is Harbinger Wars 2, number 2. So, but there's like some good names here. Like you got Matt Kent and Thomas Giarello. Like there's some good solid comic book names. But you know, it's just, they're characters that normally people don't really know about, but they're still solid storylines. So, you know, you got characters like Bloodshot and, I don't know, Exo Manowar and, you know, Shade the Changing Man, if he's still around. But, anyways, they're still going strong, and apparently there's going to be a Bloodshot movie. So Sony's, going strong with those characters. So I just thought we should, you know, talk about it a little bit.
Absolutely. Harbinger Wars 2. Check that out. Valiant. The resurgent Valiant. Coming right back at you. Chris, you just gave me, I think, three?
Five.
Five?
Yeah.
Five. And there are literally another five.
Easy.
New stuff at your local comic book shop this week. So we encourage everybody to head in to their local comic book shop and check out the new this week.
All right. So let's have a quick musical interlude. So I have left the Looney Tunes music just playing.
Okay.
So I have no idea where we're going to go in. But I figured we'll just kind of tune in and then tune out.
Tune in and tune out.
All right. Let's see where we're going here.
Let's go. Thank you. Call.
Wasn't that the one where, you know, he's conducting the Bugs Bunny is conducting the orchestra and it's, you know, la.
No, Leopold. Leopold.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I love that. Hey, you know what? We talked about it before, I think. I think I saw a documentary. This is where I learned about this, where I think it was the fateful moment of Looney Tunes was where they decided, they had to make the decision to go with contemporary music or classical music. So, I mean, we could have been stuck with some hokey Danny Kaye number, you know.
Hey, he said to say hello, by the way.
Oh, Danny Kaye said hello? Yeah. That's wonderful, yeah. Tell him hello back.
I will.
You know, and they decided to go with classical. Yeah,
perfect.
Well.
Perfect.
And,
it's timeless.
I think that just adds to the magic of Looney Tunes. Now, they did a couple. I don't really remember the Three Little Pigs when they were jazz musicians.
That's
and stuff.
That's a great one.
That's
yeah.
fantastic.
If you want to play hot, you got to be cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Chris, excellent segue into industry news.
Industry news brought to you by
Jameson's Signature Club Soda.
Oh, nice. You know what?
It is the Irish Club Soda.
Irish Club Soda.
So it has a little bite.
Yeah, well, yeah, it can.
And only available at fine club soda establishments.
It's the shamrock in it.
It's got the shamrock in it. And it's your lucky club soda.
Oh!
Top of the morning to
you. Top of the morning to you.
All right, Chris, let's talk about, I don't know what, we have a few big topics to talk about. Why don't
why don't we talk about Fox accepting Disney's offer?
Yeah, so this is kind of like the soap opera that we've been following for the last month and a half or so. So Fox offers Disney offers, Fox accepts, Comcast counters.
Yeah.
And then Disney has to counter back, and now Fox accepts Disney's offer.
Yeah.
So they're saying now maybe within 2 weeks we get regulators, everybody to approve.
Yeah.
But the Fox guys are going, hey, that doesn't mean we're not still accepting counter offers.
Right.
So, and it may not even be Comcast. Well, that's what the little line at the end says. Hey, you know, we have two bidders right now, but who knows?
Right. Because now it's up to $71 billion.
That's a lot of clams.
That's a lot of clams. That you got to make a lot of movies to make that back.
Oh, man.
So I guess, initially it was 50 some odd billion from Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And then
65.
And then 65 cash. And now Disney's gone back to saying 71.3 billion in cash and stock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's crazy.
I think. Again, we're following the story, so we're allowed to comment. I'm rooting for Disney.
Me too. We're rooting for Disney because we want to see all those awesome Marvel characters who Fox currently has the rights to make movies out of. We want to see them become part of the rest of the Marvel stable. Right?
Back in the Marvel Cinematic Universe where they belong, right? It's odd, though. I don't know how to articulate what I'm trying to say, but when Disney bought Marvel, when you look at it back at it now, that was like, you know, the bargain of the century.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Like $4 billion for, you know, the world's greatest comic book properties that you can make movie after movie after movie after
Seems
movie
Seems like such
on.
A bargain now.
Oh, my goodness. And then, like, Fox now
is
lucky as kind of with the success. Marvel's success has increased the price of Fox.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Marvel's ability
Even though Fox hasn't actually done that well.
That's right. Like, so Fox has been screwing it up.
Yeah.
Had Marvel not made a success of it, and Fox is running Fantastic Four and X-Men into the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're looking for buyers, and everybody's going, hey, get away from me. No,
totally,
Don't bother me. Right? Quit
bugging me, kid. You bought me.
Yeah. But, Fox still has tons of other properties. You and I are talking more about the the comic book stuff. But apparently this isn't dead. Hopefully we can report soon.
I would love to be able to report in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or, you know what? We're going to be reporting in September.
That's right.
This is our last show for the summer. because July is next week, and we take July and August off to recuperate and make our show better.
That's right. We write bits for next year.
Yeah, sure. Over the summer. Sure we do. So this is... but when we come back, that'll be one of the first things we talk about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I hope it's resolved by then. Yeah. Hope it's not one of those like... You ever bid online? When you bid online, there's a couple of... I'm going to give a couple of nice plugs to a couple of comic purchase sites like for old-time comics.
Yep.
You got Comic Link
out
of Portland, Maine.
Yeah.
And you got Comic Connect,
right,
the old metropolis out of Manhattan, NYC. So they both have a different ending system. When let's pick a comic everybody knows, Spider-Man number 129.
Okay.
First appearance of the Punisher. I'm making up a number here, but let's say a 9.2 goes for roughly $2,000.
Okay.
Roughly.
Yeah.
So the way Comic Connect operates is it ends in 20 seconds, 19, 18, right, 17. Right, right. And I have to throw my bid in.
Right.
Now, if I really want that book, let's say it's increments of $100, let's just say.
Yeah.
So it's at $1,900.
Yeah.
So if I want to win that book and it's been a hot auction and I really, really want it badly, I might put $2,600 as my bid.
Right.
Now, if you are sitting at your house and you really want that book, and you bid $2,200.
Right.
Right? The last 3 seconds, you know, last 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Right? What happens is I win the book for $2,400.
Right.
I don't have to pay the full 26. Right. I pay the next increment above the second highest bidder.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
So, but it's like you have to think, you have to put your top max, and then you have to live with it.
Yeah.
Because you might miss it.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, some guy or girl.
And it always seems like, he beat me up by $100.
By $100. But that person could have had $3,100.
He could have had $8,000 on it.
Right? Right. So it differs from Comic Connect.
Right.
Comic Connect is kind of paralleling this damn deal from Disney and Fox.
Yeah.
The way Comic Connect does is if you're within the last 3 minutes, and let's say you get down to a minute and 26 seconds, and I bid 2,000.
Right.
Well, then it ups the time back to 3 minutes called extended bidding.
Yes, yes.
So now the next schmo has 3 minutes to think about whether he wants the thing.
Yeah.
And then he's sitting there going, I don't want to overpay it. Yeah, but I really want the book. I don't want to overpay it, but I really want the book. Okay, $2,100.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like with 12 seconds left, you think you have it. And then all of a sudden you see three minutes left. Then you're sitting there like a moron going, well, what a moron. Why do you spend that much? But I really want that book. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do it. 7 seconds left. You hit 2,200.
Yeah.
You go. Right. And then the next guy's yelling at you at his house or her house. So historically, that gets you more money.
Totally. Yeah. Well, yeah.
That gets you more money because you have more time.
Yep.
You and I were pulling the trigger there. I'm just going to go as much as I can. And you don't think the other guy's going to go as high. I think I can get it. I'm going to put 26 in.
Yeah.
He won't possibly go that high. Right. But when you have time to think about it, and this is exactly what's happening with this, with this thing. Now, Comcast, their number crunchers are going, we can do this and we can do that. And blah, 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 blah. And then let's raise it another $4 billion or $6 billion.
Why not? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I wish they had like a Comic Link thing. All right, everybody. You have, June 28th.
Yeah, that's the next deadline.
10 p.m. I want all bids in and the winning bidder gets it. All right?
That would be awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, not going that way, so they're going to drag it out.
All right.
Hey, Chris, I want to talk to you about it's con season.
It is con season.
And
are you talking about this?
I'm going to Montreal next week.
Oh, that's right, yes.
I think you're popping in on Saturday, right?
I am. Well, you know what? We're going to have one final live broadcast there in Montreal.
From Montreal.
Yeah.
And for our listeners in Quebec.
In Quebec.
Chris and I will do it bilingually.
We'll do it in French.
And we'll do it in French.
For sure, yeah, absolutely.
And so we're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
From the...
Parlez-vous français?
Oui.
Oui, oui.
Chris Family Show.
Sorry.
That's all right. So I want to talk about this thing. There was this article on ICV2 from this about this con in Seattle that happened called the Ace
right.
Comic Con. And so I'm going to give you the gist of it, Chris, and then you can add in. So what the writer is saying is, like, this is the future of Comic Cons. It's basically very, very limited old comic book dealers.
Right. So you, from what I read, there was like
six
out of 100.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not much of a comic
But there wasn't even that many dealers. 100 dealers is nothing.
No.
Right? What it was a massive space devoted to a massive stage devoted to delivering for all entrants.
Right.
Access and views of major celebrities.
Right.
Right. Now, within the confines of that, there were packages that you can pay, let's say, $600 to get a picture and an autograph with Chris Hemsworth.
Okay, yeah. Thor.
He canceled out at the last minute, and then they got somebody else. But the point
Chris
is,
Chris Evans.
Yeah, he was supposed to be there too, and he canceled out too. But the point is the show was super well attended.
Yeah,
and the majority focus of all the attendees were the Hollywood angle.
Right.
Were, I want to get a photo op. I want to get a selfie. I want to get a signature. I want to get an autograph.
Yeah.
I want to have an experience of meeting Hawkeye, whoever. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm making up a thing. And I'm going to this Comic-Con. And this is like the point of this thing was 90 or 80% of the patrons of this con are going to this Comic-Con with absolutely zero interest in comic books.
Right.
Absolutely zero interest in cosplay.
Yeah.
Absolutely zero interest in panels about writers
pop
of the new comic series coming out. And
Or you even know, of movies or anything like that.
Yeah. All they want to do is go and see celebrities, stand in line and get autographs from celebrities and pay big money to get pictures with celebrities.
Right.
And it's like the one guy at the end, this is the fitting thing, is we snobby old school fans have finally won the argument that everybody should love what we love.
Right.
Which is comic book culture.
Right.
And this is what our victory looks like. Right.
Well, you know, it's funny because as I said to you at the beginning, before the show started, I said, you know, it's like, you know, love comic culture, hate comic books.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's hate comic books, but like indifferent to comic books. Like they don't matter.
Right. So, but you know what? This is not something that's relatively new. We saw the writing on the wall for this way back, I'd say 15 years ago, even where people were going to the San Diego Comic-Con, and the old joke was, if you want to get away from the crowds, go to the old dealers.
Yeah, the old comic section,
We've seen this. You and I have seen this. We saw this, shows like the Detroit Comic-Con, Motor City Con, have had celebrities for decades.
That's right, yeah.
Right? And they've done very well with that.
That's right. Yeah, so they went that route.
They went that route early on.
Yeah.
Early on.
90s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we see this at the Niagara Con.
Well, yeah, the guys at the Niagara Con, kudos to them. They went populist, basically.
Right.
They got old wrestlers, iconic wrestlers.
Yeah.
See, I don't even know any old wrestlers.
I don't know.
Iron Sheik.
All those kind of
and
guys.
And those guys. And come see them. And it's like, they got...
but they also got guys
TV
like...
TV personalities, like, you know, the cast from Degrassi.
Yeah.
Have nothing to do with comics.
No, but they also get... Right? But they do get some guys because they got, you know, what's the guy... A couple of the guys that were in, like, Guardians of the Galaxy were there.
That's right. Okay.
You know, James Gunn's brother. I don't know whatever his name is.
Peter?
Sure. I don't know if that's it. Michael Rooker, who was there. So, you know, there were some people there from comics, but clearly they were there for the celebrity aspect of it, you know, and so it's doing very well. It worries me, though, because I enjoy going to conventions and seeing those guys, but I'm also there for comics.
Right.
As well as some pop culture stuff.
Okay.
You know.
All right. All right, but
I don't super enjoy going to the conventions where it's a hotel con and there's 20 dealers set up and it's all the same guys every show.
I think what I think has to happen, and honestly, it's kind of happening too. What I think has to happen is, like, this past weekend, Chris, I was at the CCBS.
What
the
is that?
Toronto Comic Book Show.
Okay.
And it's at a hotel.
Were you set up there or did you just go?
Yeah, set up.
Okay.
A hotel just north of the 401 near the 427.
Okay.
It's for anybody listening outside of GTA Toronto area. It's like, you know, on the fringes of the city.
Right.
I don't know what it is. It's $80 a table.
Nothing. Yeah.
Right? And it's 30 vendors, maybe.
Yeah.
Every single one of them is a comic book vendor.
Right.
It's pure comics.
Right.
So what's happened is the rise of the old traditional comic shows
right.
has happening underneath the success of the mega media events.
Right.
So the one-day Comic-Cons expanded in the 90s to two-day Comic-Cons and then to three-day Comic-Cons and then to mega event cons.
Yeah.
And then comics got buried in the success.
Right.
So
now they're going back.
Now they're going back to. So in a way. Let me finish my train of thought. So Fan Expo's coming up.
Yeah.
And we're a vendor at Fan Expo. We've been there since the beginning. Since
right.
like whatever it was, 91 or whatever it
yeah,
was.
Yeah,
yeah. So this year, because of the island I get, right?
Yes.
The island I get, and I don't want to give it. Nobody wants to give up their old space.
Right.
Right? They just kind of keep it and grandfather it forward and stuff like that. I'm not going to be out of line when I say that the show, Chris,
yeah.
the show to do, staffing, hotels, gas, food,
all that
tables
stuff.
And stuff, $25,000. It's going to cost me.
It's going to cost you to do that show.
Right.
Right.
I just did a TCBS.
For
$80.
$80.
Maybe $200 because Jay and I ate a lot after.
Yeah,
but you know your gas, your day,
whatever.
Yeah, you're not staying overnight anywhere.
No.
So you know you fill up your gas tank, you go for a nice meal, whatever. So it's peanuts,
right?
And I'm not going to tell you that. What's that? That's 25, 75 times, let's say, or 100 times the money.
Yeah,
right. 120 times the money, whatever. I cannot tell you that there was 120 times the comic buyers coming to Fan Expo.
Right.
There isn't.
No, there's not.
Right?
No.
So my point is old comic shop, old comic book dealers, old things, they may not belong to these big events anymore. You know?
Well, then who does? That's the problem.
Apparently, Chris Helmsworth cancels at the last minute.
Nobody wants to go to... okay, I shouldn't say nobody. Clearly, people do, but... I mean, if you're going to go to a convention, you got to go to a convention. It can't just be celebrities.
At what point?
Or just call it Celebfest.
But hold on. Out of 100 dealers, 6 were comic dealers, and the guy said there was almost sold out.
Right.
So, a fraction, a sliver,
yeah,
is still tolerable. At what point does it not become tolerable for fans to go? My point is everybody paid... 90% of them didn't care about those 6 comic dealers.
Yeah.
So if I'm one of those 6 comic dealers, why am I going and paying the huge 3-day con, big table prices
right.
because of the... You're paying based on attendance.
Yeah.
The comic cons, they're going, hey, buddy, we get 140,000 people in here
yeah.
over 4 days.
Yeah.
You have to pay me $1 million a table.
Sure.
Because we're getting the people in.
Yeah.
And then when you do the math, you go, well, I am getting the attention of maybe 5% of those people.
Right.
You know? So why am I paying so much?
Yeah.
So maybe like the whole, I mean,
but I guess
not maybe, it's happening because you see a lot of the weekend warrior type guys that we're setting up at Fan Expo, at New York Comic Con, at San Diego Comic Con that were maybe setting up in 1987 and
yep.
1991
yep.
and Toronto in 1983.
They're not doing it anymore.
They're not there anymore.
So you know what? You know what these shows need to become then?
What?
I'm going to come out and say this.
Yeah.
These shows need to become no longer a venue for selling secondhand goods or even relatively new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be a venue for strictly corporations
right.
to sell brand cutting edge new stuff.
Right.
I don't mean it can't even be a month old. It has to be like
Your
Marvel.
It's all exclusives. Hasbro has to huge setup with lines because you're getting the exclusive figure.
Right.
Marvel has to come out and have a huge booth.
It has to be just Marvel, just DC, just Hasbro, just whoever, right?
Yeah, Nintendo and Xbox, and then showing off new games.
All those companies, and then they come out, they showcase it all, and there shouldn't be any retailers there.
You're a buyer. You're a connoisseur, Chris. I like your tastes in old comics. You like the esoteric, hard to find stuff from the late 40s, early 50s. You are looking at a con and going, my goodness, I got to pay $60 to get in.
Yep.
To four corporate dealers are the only guys that can afford tables, and I've seen their stuff 100 times already.
Yep.
Why would I even go to this show? Even buyers,
it's a great question,
are not going
to. You know what? So recently gone to Niagara.
Yeah.
And walked away with nothing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Walked away with nothing. Frequently go to Fan Expo, and very rarely do I buy anything. Generally, if I do, it's something that I bought from you.
Right.
That you've put aside because you bought a collection.
Yeah, and had some esoteric stuff.
And had something esoteric. And you're like, I know Chris will like this.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So, and then you look at it, hey, I'll take that one.
Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? You're right. So I want to go, but at the same time.
But you're also, though, savvy enough and involved enough in the hobby and in the general just kind of fandom that you also enjoy the spectacle of what is there.
I love it.
As well.
I love it. Right. I'm a glutton for punishment. I don't think I've ever gone to a show and said, why am I here?
Right.
And then the next second been, oh man, I love this stuff.
Yeah.
It's great. Like, ah, oh, God, why don't I come to these stupid things? I wouldn't miss
it. I was just talking to Spock Vegas.
Right?
That guy's cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's, hey, so. Let's go over a list then.
Okay.
Okay? Based on where we've been.
Yeah.
And based on word of mouth, what we've heard.
Yeah.
What are the top 10 Comic-Cons in North America?
North America?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't think neither of us have gone to San Diego.
Neither of us have gone to San Diego.
So we can't use that one.
We can't. Well, that one's off the table.
Off the table.
Yeah.
Number one for me has to be Chicago.
Yeah, the Wizard World one, not the C2E2.
Not the C2E2, Wizard World.
In the summer.
In the summertime, at least we used to be in that.
For everything. Okay, not just for old comics.
No, because you know what? That show has, to me, has everything. It has old comics. It has artists that can get sketches out.
Yeah.
It has cool toys.
Corporate.
Marvel and DC set up there.
Yeah.
Like, it has everything.
Yeah, yeah. CGC will set up there.
CGC will set up. But you know what?
Remember they had the band? They had like a rock and roll band.
Rock and roll band.
Playing, right?
Yeah. They got cutting edge stuff. I remember one year they had a giant tent out just for the Image people. Like,
right.
You know, I don't say cutting edge, but like, you know, they've got stuff where
innovative.
It's like innovative,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They have, the prices back then, I don't know what they're like now, I haven't been in a couple of years, but weren't so out of whack where the mom and pop places could still go.
I agree with you there. Right? I think for me as well, I'm going to put that Chicago Wizard World August show.
Yeah.
As the number one show.
Yeah, me too.
In just terms of, and you know, with the right mix of everything.
Everything.
You know, if you want to go buy old comics, you can go there. If you want to immerse yourselves in comic book popular culture, you can go there. If you want activities after the show in terms of greet and meets and panels and this, you can go there.
So, because that was the show where, you know, long before, I'm talking 1990, 1989, 91, around there. That was long before cosplay was huge.
Yeah.
But cosplay was big there.
Right.
But even at like the Fan Expo, nobody was dressing up.
Right.
Right. But you go to that show and people were like, people were passionate. I don't want to say hardcore, but they're passionate, you know.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
What's number two?
For me?
For you.
New York Comic Con, just for the sheer size.
Yeah.
It's you know, twice the size. That Chicago show is massive.
Huge.
New York is twice the size.
Yeah.
But also is the for any room in the world at any time over those 4 days at the Javits Center, you will have the most value in old comics anywhere amassed in the world.
100%.
Anywhere.
100%.
Anywhere amassed in the world, you will have, I'm making up a silly number, $100 million in old comics under those huge walls.
Under those roofs.
Yeah. Under those roofs.
Yeah.
You'll have, you know, no other con you walk into and you know there's literally 50 Amazing Fantasy 15s in the room.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
There are probably three Detective 27s in this room right now. There are probably 12 Batman 1s in this room right now.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous.
There could be an Action 1 in there somewhere.
Yeah, there's probably two or three Action 1s in there. At any time. It is just...
That's the show you go to and you end up going to buy, like, say, Metropolis.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, normally at a show, you're lucky to see one Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a show you'll be like, this guy's got 12 of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like, it's crazy. It's stupid.
So in terms of, but also what New York gives you, too. New York gives you what Chicago gives you times three.
Yeah.
Why I put Chicago ahead of New York... Chicago, you go in there with a fighting chance of walking home with something.
Exactly.
For a half decent price.
Yeah, you're right.
And in New York, you just kind of, you're beaten before you get in there.
New York, you're going to find it, but it's going to cost you a heck of a lot.
You don't
want to
pay what you find it for.
Even, but you know what? Even the artists, I remember last time I was in New York, even the artists know that, right? Like, you know, you go to Chicago, and it's back in the day when I was buying lots of artwork, you'd buy, you know, some artworks for, say, $50. And in New York, it's $200.
Right.
You know, because they know if you don't want it, the guy behind you will, right? Mm-hmm. So it's easily sold.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, New York's number two.
For me, New York is also number two. But here is the thing.
Here's the thing.
What's number three?
Ah! Now.
I'll tell you what my number three is.
What is?
Motor City.
You know what? I was thinking Motor City.
Motor City's number three.
And Motor City is the poor man's Chicago.
Exactly.
Right.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Motor City is the poor man's Chicago. Motor City is the con that you're going to find stuff.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not as much.
Yeah.
You're going to find something. You're not going to complete your list.
Right.
You're not going to go home with an armful of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But you're going to get something, and you're going to get it for a good price.
Right.
Right?
Right, right. So, and there's enough novelties at that show to preoccupy your time.
100%. I mean, where else can you go and, you can talk to Sika in one hand and then go talk to, Gil Gerard in another.
Oh, my goodness. And they're right beside each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. I think I've always been a fan of that show. Yeah. I think you got it. I think so far we got Chicago, August, New York, just because of its, just sheer weight.
Yeah.
And then I like Detroit as number three.
Yeah.
Number four. Oh, man. I want to say, now here's one I'm going to say from hearsay.
Okay.
From hearsay, but I think times may have changed and it may have gone down, but the Calgary Comic Con.
I've heard it's really good. I've never been, but I've heard it's good.
And the reason I say the Calgary Comic Con, but maybe times have changed enough that, and I'm not. But let's say let's pretend I'm talking 4 years ago.
All right.
It'll be the Calgary Comic Con. Because what Calgary is and what Calgary represents is similar to what, let's say, the first... or second year or third year of the London, England Comic Con would have been, or the Sydney, Australia Comic Con would have been, is the proliferation of Comic Cons as mega events in large cities that weren't traditional comic cities is a relatively new thing within the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So it would have been magic to be at a Calgary Comic Con, let's say, within the first 4 years of its launch.
Right.
Because... you have a large million population city that has also a large, large area of other cities like, say, Edmonton or Winnipeg.
We have Montana.
Or northern states and all that kind of stuff that have never had a Comic-Con.
Right.
Right. Right,
yeah.
And so to them, this is the look, Ma, we only got to drive 8 hours and we're going to get there. Hell, let's go. Yeah. Right. And so the magic of this whole comic industry moving into an area that is starved of the event.
Yeah.
It was just like, I knew a couple of guys that set up the first few years. And they're going, Walt, holy cripe. You're like a rock star.
Yeah.
You're just there. They're coming. They're buying everything.
Everything.
I remember Harley Yee from Detroit.
Yeah.
He told me about the first couple of London Comic Cons in England.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's like, cripe, a comic that doesn't say 6 pence on it, it actually says 12 cents US cents.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everybody was just like
frothing at the mouth,
buying and just buying and buying.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, over time, maybe this year's Calgary Con may be more like a fan expo or something like that. But the magic of a con like Calgary. A fresh con,
would probably be
up there on my list.
I think that would be number four for me. I mean, I haven't been to Calgary, but I've heard a lot of great things about it.
So have I.
I think number five for me, and you know, we should probably cap it. Maybe I don't know if we can do 10, but
Pittsburgh.
Number five is Pittsburgh.
So I knew you'd say Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is a great. But it's changed, so I don't know if it's the same Pittsburgh con that it used to be.
Right.
It's changed, but when I went to it for years, you know, again, same feel, a little bit less than a Motor City, but same feel as a Motor City.
Now, you've always told me, though, Chris, that you liked Pittsburgh because, I mean, you know, the commodities are all the same, but it's how the promoters treated the patrons, how the promoters treated the people coming.
Promoters treated the guests awesome.
Yeah.
You know what? The venue is great.
Yeah.
Lots of hotels in the area to choose from.
So everything
works. Everything works. Uh-huh. Cosplay. They've got art auctions. They've got all kinds of cool stuff.
Right.
And it's small enough that you can talk to the artists and spend some time with it. I remember talking to, you know, I that's where I met Julius Schwartz and Al Williamson and Al Feld. And you know all these old time creators, but at the same time, that's where I also met, you know, newer guys like Frank Cho and you know, like it was an awesome experience. So
all right, well listen, we can go. I've realized 10 might have been too much because
we're
running out of time. We'll cap it at 5. But everybody, do themselves a favor, head out to a Comic Con this year. They're tons and tons of fun.
Are we gonna have a music?
No, because we're running out of time.
Running out of time.
Hey,
right.
We got to talk about this thing, this Walmart to carry. Exclusive DC Comics in 3,000 Walmarts in the USA.
Yeah, this is causing a lot of stink.
Yeah, so basically DC is putting out 4 giant, 100-page giant comics.
Right.
Specifically to be carried, or exclusively to be carried by Walmart.
Right.
And they're coming out July 1st. One is a Superman, a Justice League, a Batman, and a Teen Titans.
Okay, so now Walt, when you first heard of this concept of these giant books that are only going to be offered at Walmart and not anywhere else, what were your initial thoughts?
Well, initially I go, oh no, Walmart's competing with local comic book shops. This isn't good.
Right.
Right? But, you know, when I read about, and I'm not so much worried about this first salvo, it's what they represent, right? The first salvo is kind of like a lot of reprints and stuff like that. But I'm of two minds here.
Okay.
I've always complained and thought that the problem with comic books, like printed comic books, wasn't demand as much as it was distribution. Comics have painted themselves into a corner. The publishers are painting themselves into a corner of relying on direct distribution to comic shops.
Yep.
Unfortunately, and I'm not casting judgment on anybody. I'm just I'm casting judgment on us as a whole. We're the worst ragtag fleet of vagabonds in the history of the world.
Yeah.
There's, I'm going to put a number out there, 3,000 comic shops in North America. Could be 4, could be 2, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm saying none of us talk to each other.
No.
Everybody, you know, looks under the eye at the other. Nobody trusts each other. Everybody's too busy to do their job properly because we're all stretched out. You know, it's, we're the worst, like, we're our own worst enemy at time.
Yeah, yeah.
And for I guess I feel, let's say, DC's and Marvel's pain is when they've put all their eggs into this basket of 3,000 basket cases.
Yep, yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And so now DC's exploring ways to go and get more comics. You know, and they touched on what you and I talked about with that Ace show.
Right, right.
Is people love these movies.
Yes.
And what DC is saying is, hey, there's millions of people that love these movies that may not want to go into a little tiny hole-in-the-wall comic shop.
Okay,
and we're giving them access to the characters that they love in the movies at Walmart.
But here's the thing.
Who's
buying these things at Walmart, and for what age group?
Yeah. Well,
because
that's
my
next get. That's my next point.
Okay.
I think it could be good.
It could be. Could be good.
I think it could get comics into the hands of more people.
Okay.
I think if comic shops stay hardcore, true specialist at comics.
Yep.
Then as people passively buy comics at a Walmart and they get more immersed and like what they read, they will gravitate toward the specialist in the field.
I agree with you. However, I'm worried about the material that they're going to be republishing, because a lot of the stuff is going to be republished. Not a whole lot of new content's coming out.
As of right now.
Right. I'm worried about the stuff that they're going to be republishing, because what, in my opinion, and it's a very humble opinion at that, in my opinion, what they need to do is focus more on younger readers. And I don't mean the 5 to 7 age group. I mean, because they're doing a good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the 10-year-olds, mm-hmm. because there's no real good comics out there for 10-year-olds these days. It's either like really kiddie or stuff we're buying.
Right.
There's no, like, the comics from the 70s, they were kind of geared towards an adult could read it, but, you know,
11-year-old
could read it, right? Yeah. And that's where they need to gear this stuff. If they're publishing or reprinting all kinds of 100-page giants and sending them to Walmart of stuff from the 70s,
mm-hmm.
go for it.
Right, but they're doing the 2003, 2011,
right.
2000
and... I don't think that's right.
Yeah,
I think all they're doing there is just saturating the market.
But, I think you're right, but I think that's not the point here. I think the point here is they're trying something through Walmart. And if sales of this go well, then they'll keep morphing this program, and maybe one day,
maybe.
And this is the point that might, because Walmart has pull, maybe one day Walmart gets exclusive brand new Bendis stories.
Wow. And aren't you going to love that?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, but as of right now, though, Walmart carrying stuff, it's like, trust me, Walmart is an efficient beast, okay? It's a powerful machine, but I want it to be more like the library. You know, people get introduced to comics at the library, and then they go to their local comic book shop to immerse themselves into it.
Yeah.
All right.
Listen, we gotta wrap it up here.
Woo!
Appreciate everybody listening to us. We will see you back in September.
Yes, we will. We're taking a well-deserved rest from each other. And you're listening to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station, and podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. Show was engineered and produced by Chris Owen, and we will see everybody in a couple weeks. Please, in the meantime, all summer long, go out and support your local comic book shop.
And have yourself a wonderful day.